This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea in today for Anthony Brooks.
In the studio with us right now is James Mihalik. He is a professor of psychology at Boston College. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
And on the phone, Michael Addis. He is a professor of psychology at Clark University. Professor Addis, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, you're both here because of a new report that you've co-authored called Men at Risk, the Physical, Mental, and Social Health of Men in Massachusetts.
I feel fine, by the way. Good. Thank you for implicitly asking.
So I am glad to know
that. I presume our health is great.
Yeah, well, I hope so. But let's see. If we can, let's start with some quick facts. Professor Mihalik, for men, how does life expectancy compare between men and women?
Men in the United States, and this is true in most developed countries around the world, die on average about 5.5 years earlier than women. If you're a black man in the United States, it's about 7 years earlier than white men even.
Okay, so what about heart disease?
Heart disease is the number one killer for men and women, but 3 out of 4 persons who die of heart disease before 65 are men.
So 75% there.
Yeah.
Got it. So what about something, let's say, even more preventable, like skin cancer?
Well, kind of interesting enough, I think we tend to think in terms of women being more likely to tan, but men are out in the sun more and have about 4 times the rate of melanoma.
4 times?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And Professor Addis, I'm looking for a ray of sunshine here, if I can say that. What about mental health when it comes to men?
Well, I wish I could give you a ray of sunshine, but the fact is that compared to women, although men are half as likely to be diagnosed with clinical depression, they're actually 4 times more likely to take their own lives.
Wow. Okay. So, Adam, you are our resident guy here.
Oh, thank you.
I can say. And I do know that you wear your sunscreen. And just yesterday, a 9th grader on the show forced you to take a no junk food pledge.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing all these kind of grim facts about men, what's going through your head right now?
I'm thinking I should stop eating beef jerky from a beer helmet while I ride my motorcycle over shark tanks. But seriously, if you look at the gender models that are out there for us, can you really blame us for the way we behave?
The police often question him just because they find him interesting. His beard alone has experienced more than a lesser man's entire body. His blood smells like cologne. He is the most interesting man in the world.
So the message there, as far as I can tell, Meghna, is that drink Dos Equis, right?
Yeah.
Live your life such that your face looks like leather, you know, put as many miles on the old odometer as possible, and women will love you.
That does seem to be the message, and I have to say, I feel really bad for guys when we look at it that way, and that's why on today's Talker, we're going to look into what our guests warn is one of the biggest threats to men's health, and that's the notion of masculinity itself. Men are groomed from youth to believe that they need to be stoic and tough, but is that outlook coming at the cost of their physical and mental well-being? And especially, or even here in Massachusetts, we've got this impressive medical infrastructure, an almost 100% insurance rate, and pretty widespread medical culture. But are men getting the help they need? And that's what I want to ask our listeners. So you can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also try us, as always, on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. So, James Mihalik, you and Michael Addis co-authored this report called Men at Risk, the Physical, Mental, and Social Health of Men in Massachusetts. You even testified on Beacon Hill about this recently. So what did you tell lawmakers is the big problem with masculinity in Massachusetts today?
Well, masculinity was, I think, one of a number of factors that people talked about. But, you know, it gets, I think, a little bit more of the headlines because it's a little bit different way to think about what contributes to health. And along the lines of what you've been talking about, that there are messages towards men in terms of being masculine that often include health risk behaviors. So a real man should be able to hold his liquor, or if he's hurt, he should walk it off, or, you know, rub some dirt in it or something, and and it'll be fine. Or if you do have a problem, then you should really be able to fix it yourself and be self-reliant and not need others to get help. And when we kind of internalize those sorts of messages about how to be a man, Well, those inherently go against a lot of things that we know to be health-promoting sorts of behaviors.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Michael Addis, you're author of a forthcoming book titled Invisible Men, Men's Inner Lives and the Consequences of Silences. So these sort of behaviors that don't promote health, how pervasive are they? Is it basically like every man is subject to these influences, regardless of where they work or who they are, or let's say even where they live?
Well, there are individual differences. I mean, all men receive the same dominant messages from society: be tough, keep your emotions under control, handle things on your own. But it varies from guy to guy how much those messages have been around as we've grown up and how much we've internalized them. But research shows very clearly that those men who are more likely to have internalized those messages suffer a much wider range of problems, ranging from mental health issues to physical health issues.
Hmm. It seems to be hard. It would be hard. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in the shoe of a modern day guy in, I guess, very larger shoes than I would be wearing right now. But it's hard. It would be hard not to internalize those messages. I mean, James Mihalik, they seem to be coming from everywhere.
Well, we do get them a lot in. We do get them. Some of the commercials that you overlooked are. What's been surprising to me is we've taken a look at trying to think about health behaviors has been particularly like diet commercials or food commercials, and just to see how, the commercial for the woman is eating a small little thing of yogurt and, talking about how wonderful that is. And then the man's commercial is the triple Whopper cheeseburger, kind of just ordering a heart attack.
Yeah, the man witch.
Sure, sure. Right. So all kind of men's food are high in salt, high in fat, and we know what sorts of health consequences having such a high diet and having such a poor diet can contribute to.
Mm. And Michael Addis, I'm going to ask, are women in part to blame for this? Because as you said, over time, maybe the conception of masculinity has changed, but has it changed enough when it comes to the messages that women are sending men?
Well, both men and women are exposed to messages about what's appropriate for each of their genders. So yes, women have expectations about what appropriate masculinity is, and so do men. And I don't really look at it as a question of who's to blame as much as a question of, what can we all do as a society to challenge some of these messages that are ultimately harmful to both men and women.
Mm. So why did you decide to bring this issue to lawmakers on Beacon Hill?
Well, I think Jim and I and others feel that the scientific evidence is pretty clear that these messages about manhood have harmful effects on men's well-being. One of the things we haven't touched on yet is that men are significantly less likely than women to seek help for virtually every physical and mental health problem there is out there, despite the fact that, as you said in your intro, Massachusetts is one of the best states in the country in which to be ill. We have an incredible mental and physical health infrastructure, and yet men are not taking advantage of it, and the fallout from that is great for them and for families and communities, too.
Hmm. We are talking about masculinity and men's health in Massachusetts. What's getting in the way, guys, of you going to the doctor when you need to? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. James Mihalik, let me ask you, you've spoken, I understand, in the course of doing this report, Men at Risk, you actually spoke to a lot of men about their attitudes and their concerns. Who did you talk to, and what did they tell you?
We had we've been doing research on health behaviors and factors that contribute to men taking care of themselves well or not taking care of themselves well. And we had done a series of interviews. We had sampled construction workers and laborers because there's some evidence that they had higher rates of certain health risk behaviors like smoking. So I wanted to meet and talk with them and kind of analyze those interviews. Some of the most striking things that we learned were kind of their attitudes towards going to doctors for health care. And I had a story of talking to this one carpenter who was talking about kind of being at a work site and saying, well, he got injured around something, but, he wasn't going to go to the doctor for that. I said, what would you go to the doctor for? And we try to like take this up. Well, so if you like cut off tip of your finger or, how much would it have to be? And he started to tell me a story about a guy at his site who had shot himself in the hand with a nail gun. And I said, well, did he go to the doctor? And he's like, oh no, he sat down and, you know, just kind of pulled it out himself. And then he looks at me and says, oh, and it was reverse barbed, which meant that was harder, you know, to come out. And he said that all the, said, well, you know, what were people saying? Well, they just watched him as he pulled it out. And when he had it all the way out, you know, I said, well, what was their reaction? It's like, well, he's the man. You know, so there was a lot of admiration and respect for him not going to the doctor to tough it out, to kind of go through this by himself without asking for anyone's help. And you know, those types of messages are really difficult, I think, to make a dent into.
Is there no evidence that that those messages are limited to any particular socioeconomic group, sure. any cultural
no.
group, nothing. It's what men face every day.
Sure. One of the helpful things is some of the other findings that we've had has been connected to that as men perceive. And I think the workplace story kind of shows this. As men kind of get the sense that what other men do, they're more likely to do themselves. And it's the same for all of us. We get into an elevator, everybody stands there, doesn't talk to each other. That's what we do, or into other types of social norms. And for health behaviors, our research shows that the more men perceive that other men engage in health-promoting behaviors, mm-hmm. like going to the doctor or eating a regular diet and that type of thing, the more likely they are to. The less they perceive that that's the case, the more likely they are to engage in health risk behaviors. And we found it's particularly true for men in your family and your male friends.
I see. So direct examples.
Yeah.
The closer
yeah.
they are, the more they
exactly.
matter.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let's get some of our listeners in here on this. Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking about men's health in Massachusetts, and particularly interesting because we do have such a great medical infrastructure here. Why is it that men's health outcomes still aren't as good as women's? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Newburyport. Jeff is on the line. You're on the air, Jeff.
Hi. My question is about cold. I don't know if your guests know anything about the man cold, but my wife claims that every time I get a cold, I'm laid out on the couch where she'll get a cold and is able to shrug it off and just kind of work through it. And I think they even made a commercial making fun of this man cold, and they even, my wife's friend mentioned it to her that her husband also, oh, he got a cold, he was out, I had to do everything around the house. And so do your guests know, do men suffer symptoms of colds worse than women do?
Jeff, thanks for your call. James Mihalik or Michael Addis?
I'm not aware of anything specific around that. However, let me say that I think that part of the message in that is, you know, quit being wimpy. Quit
right.
being wimpy and that type of thing. And I think men are sensitive to that. There was to the fear that others will perceive them in that way. Derek Lowe, former Red Sox pitcher a number of years ago, after he was diagnosed with skin cancer, he talked about how growing up, he's a ball player and playing outside all the time, that he didn't wear, he never wore sunscreen because he was afraid that people would think he was wimpy. And so at the point at which he then was diagnosed and had the cancer removed from his nose, then he talked about being the king of sunscreen now. So there's that fear that others will perceive that if you take care of yourself, that you'll be wimpy.
Let's take another call. Tony is calling from Medfield. Welcome to Radio Boston, Tony.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to share an anecdotal story. I'm an emergency physician, and I've been practicing for 25 years, and this happens at least once a week. A man will come in clearly having an attack, sweating, clutching his chest.
Having a heart attack, you said, Tony.
Having a heart attack.
Okay.
No question about it. And I say, what brings you in, sir? And he'll say, she made me come, which is either his wife or his girlfriend. And I always say, geez, another guy saved by a woman, because he refuses to acknowledge the degree to which he's suffering and seek help. And there's no question he's overwhelmingly symptomatic.
And obviously he didn't seek help earlier, or maybe he didn't even get any kind of preventative care?
Right. Well, who knows? This might be the first presentation that he's having a problem, but the problem is overwhelming, and his wife has lobbied for hours to get him to come to the emergency room.
Wow. Tony, thanks so much for your call. Michael Addison, James Mihalik, this leads me to actually to two questions. One is the influence of, the female gender in all of this. And second, Tony's an emergency room physician. She is basically the last line of defense when it comes to people's health, and also the most expensive line. How much is all this costing us, in a place like Massachusetts, when we do have such high-tech medical care, when men don't go until they're basically at death's door in some cases?
Sure. Go ahead, Michael, sorry.
Well, it costs an enormous amount. I mean, we know that it's much more cost-effective to do preventative health care than it is to take care of problems once they reach that sort of critical emergent point. But, you know, this issue about the role that women play, it's been true for some time that women have tended historically to take care of men's emotional and physical health. It's a stereotype, but there's some truth to it, that, you know, you have the confidant in junior high school, you know, the female who knows everything about the guy's emotional life. You have the story like Tony's, where she's dragging him into the hospital and so on. And this is part of why I think a lot of us feel that it's time that men start taking some responsibility for their own mental and physical health care.
You know, and I have to say, I sympathize a great deal with men, because especially in this day and age, for example, in this recession that we've been having, I know some people have coined it in effect a man session, because men have been hit so much harder in terms of unemployment. So that sort of doubles the impact that it has on both their physical and mental health. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the influences that keep men away from doctors, away from mental health support services when they need it. So what should we do? Massachusetts seems pretty well situated to do something proactively about it. James Mihalik?
Well, I think some of the things that we can do is pay attention to what we know influences or what we know contributes or are factors related to men's health. If men influence other men's health behaviors, I think we can think of trying to have the opportunity or the experience of seeing other men engage in healthier behaviors. I think your co-host is out because he's having a new child today, that type of thing.
Indeed.
That's right. Yeah. And I think new fathers are particularly a good way of influencing as their lives are turned, you know, upside down anyhow, that they have the chance to develop new health behaviors, maybe healthier behaviors, and to recognize that as men, that if they want their son to live a healthy life, then their own health behaviors are going to be an influence on how that boy grows up. Similarly, you know, at workplaces, in neighborhoods, in families, to have an awareness of how men influence other men's health behaviors. What type of prevention efforts do we see in workplaces? What types of outreach or messages do we see in other settings where men gather?
Can that be coordinated, Michael Addis? I mean, I think I read that part of what you propose is forming some sort of department of men's health in the Department of Public Health or something to that effect?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the statewide, and it's nationwide as well, the statistics on utilization of healthcare services, men are arguably the largest underserved population in the country and in the state of Massachusetts as well. So if you buy into the notion that a certain proportion of our resources should be dedicated to providing services for underserved populations, that really means men in a lot of ways. So yes, there is a strong need for public policies related to promoting and treating men's health.
Mm. Did you get any receptive responses from legislators on Beacon Hill when you brought these ideas or even opened their eyes to the difficulty that many of them, I guess, themselves are facing as, you know, the male legislators, at least up there?
Well, it's interesting to watch the faces of legislators, because overall I would say yes, there's a great deal of concern. There's also on some of their faces the deer in the headlights, you know, particularly among some of the men, because they recognize the personal relevance of this. And I think also a great deal of concern from both male and female legislators, because once you look at the data, it's hard to deny that it's an issue.
And James Mihalik, final thought goes to you.
Well, I think you started off thinking about masculinity as being a contributor. And I think you know, inherently we could think of masculinity a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't have to be the bad guy in this conversation. That instead of thinking of masculinity as having to be tough, it might be, if we could think of it, reframing it in terms of being strong. And what sort of factors promote strength, you know, in terms of good diet, exercise, making sure, you know, doctor's visits, sort of the types of things that keep a man strong. And we can utilize masculinity and the desire to be masculine in a way that's health-promoting rather than something that makes you avoid taking care of yourself.
So dads, brothers, fathers out there listening, take good care of yourselves and the people that you love. James Mihalik, professor of psychology at Boston College, thank you so much for joining us today. And Michael Addis, professor of psychology as well from Clark University and author of Invisible Men, Men's Inner Lives and the Consequences of Silences. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We have to take one more break, but when we come back, getting punked MIT style, plus a preview of the Red Sox home opener with Bill Littlefield. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.